From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. A Utah man facing decades in prison for killing his wife on an Alaska cruise ship has died in Juneau's jails, state prison officials say. The Alaska Department of Corrections said in a statement that Kenneth Manzanares was found unresponsive in a cell around 7 a.m. Wednesday. It says guards and medics attempted to revive the 43-year-old man. He was pronounced dead about 45 minutes later. Manzanares pleaded guilty to second-degree murder last year in federal court. He was recently sentenced to 30 years in federal prison and was awaiting transfer at Lemon Creek Correctional Center in Juneau. State officials say he's the seventh inmate to die in the Department of Corrections custody this year. It says all in-custody deaths are reviewed by the Alaska State Troopers and Medical Examiner's Office. The statement says neither COVID-19 nor foul play are suspected. Congress recently passed legislation that will bring in millions of dollars for landslide research and mapping. State scientists are excited about the new program's potential for Alaska, which needs more hazard maps. But as Claire Schrempel reports for Alaska's Energy Desk, that money isn't headed toward communities that have had deadly landslides recently.
It's been 8 months since landslides tore through the small town of Haines. They killed 2 people, destroyed 9 homes, pulverized roads, and cut the town off from its fuel and supply docks. The community is still rebuilding after its losses.
And I feel honestly frozen. It's like a frozen in time feeling.
Vanessa Wishstar and her family lived in a home next to the major slide that ran through Beach Road. Their home is intact, but it isn't safe.
Because the problem for us, it wasn't just like, okay, we're now past the slide, we could take our time. There's a giant crack still hanging, looming above our house.
Geophysicists spotted a fissure in the mountainside above their home. They say the rock could give way and trigger another slide. But they won't know the full extent of the risk for another year. The family of 4 has been in a small apartment since the disaster and is seeking a permanent solution.
There's literally no difference from when it happened to now for us, you know, our life situation. It's, I mean, if you look at it, nothing has really changed.
The small town's administration has been overwhelmed with work related to the disaster. Haines Mayor Douglas Olrud has been wading through paperwork to get what's essentially buyout money for families that can't return to homes in the danger zone.
And so the borough's on the hook for $1 to $1.5 million. Where do we come up with those funds?
He estimates that's the match to unlock millions in relief money to rehouse displaced residents. But sourcing an extra $1 million is a big ask in a town that brings in about $5 million in taxes in a good year. And Olrud says the relief money won't come overnight. The victims' rental assistance will dry up long before they know whether they qualify for the buyout program at all.
They won't know on a lot of this for 3 years if we're going to be able to do a mitigation program on it. And that's the really hard part. How do you have somebody in limbo for that long?
There is landslide money on the way for Alaska, but it isn't for Vanessa Wishstar or for Haines. This year, there's $4 million in additional federal funds for national landslide research. But all of it is headed to Prince William Sound, where a potential landslide threatens to unleash a tsunami that could devastate Whittier. That money comes because of federal legislation that passed just a month after the slides. It's aimed at better understanding landslide risks and protecting communities like Haines. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski co-sponsored the bill. Deanne Stevens heads the engineering section of the state's Department of Geological and Geophysical Surveys.
You know, everything is just, you know, screeching out of the starting zone with our race cars to try and get things taken care of and get to work on this. So it's really exciting times.
Her department is partnering with the U.S. Geological Survey for a 3-year project that aims to create a statewide database for landslide information. Stevens says it's work her department has long sought to tackle.
So hopefully this will continue on for a number of years because Alaska's huge. We have so much that really has not been looked at. You know, we kind of have a little tiny snapshot of what we think is going on out there. But I think it's going to be really eye-opening when we actually get out there and start really systematically eyeballing the landscape.
But that database isn't covering a lot of ground this year. And the new federal investment isn't currently enough to map every possible landslide in Alaska. It's not even close.
So just so we're clear, the landslide hazard program of the USGS is tiny.
Jonathan Gott runs it.
You know, you're talking about, oh, 2 dozen scientists and technicians that are in many ways, that's the federal capability in landslide hazards. I mean, there are other agencies that have people and expertise, of course, but the only program with a focus on landslide hazards is in the USGS, and it's that was that size. And we got a doubling in resources from 4 million to 8. and that work was directed towards Alaska.
Even though this year it's all directed at Prince William Sound, he and state geologists both envision a sustained effort to address needs in other parts of the state. State program officials say it will take a lot of money and many more years to do the kind of landslide assessment work the state needs. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Claire Strempel.
From burgers to buildings, supply chain issues and price spikes are complicating business around Alaska. Economists like McDonald's.
Oh, can I get you?
Yes, can I have your number 5 with sweet and sour?
Alan Brown moved to Juneau recently from Nashville, Tennessee, and he's got a little sticker shock.
There you go. Thanks.
Okay, 10-17 up for that.
10-17 is my total at home, and it would have been like 7 and change.
Brown is not an economist, but he just did a thing economists like doing with McDonald's menu. He compared the price of an identical product in two different markets. The Economist magazine has its Big Mac index, but for decades, state economists have gone with the quarter pounder with cheese, occasionally highlighting what it costs in different Alaska communities in the magazine Alaska Economic Trends. Spoiler alert for the July issue. It's $5.49 in Juneau, up 10 cents from before the pandemic. This issue of Trends focuses on spikes in the cost of living and attributes a lot of that to supply chain problems related to the pandemic. There was deflation last year amid lockdowns, but now the world is reopening. McDonald's wouldn't answer questions for this story, but a local food truck business that specializes in burgers shared what's driven its first price increases since opening in 2014. On social media last month, Pucker Wilson's said its supply costs have more than doubled since January, so the prices of most menu items went up by a dollar. Restaurants generally operate on thin profit margins, so they're especially sensitive to changes in food prices. Plus, staffing is tough right now, and there are fewer customers around with a short cruise ship season.
This is by far, in a way, the hardest thing that we've ever had to deal with.
Risha Wilson is the main owner of 5 downtown Juneau restaurants, including the Hangar on the Wharf. She says market conditions led her to leave 2 of her seasonal restaurants closed this summer and raise prices.
It's difficult to manage your day-to-day operations and just get through the day, let alone worrying about having to reprint your menus and pay attention to the inflation as we lean into a very different business model.
She says prices are up across the board, with meats and seafood especially. She hopes the supply chain problems are temporary and that she can rebuild her businesses. Melanie Shivens runs the economic publications firm Raincoast Data in Juneau.
I think that most organizations miscalculated how quickly, once people got the vaccines and once the vaccines were distributed, how quickly sort of normal life would return, and so normal demand. And so you just see a lag, and you see it locally, nationally, globally, in terms of getting the supply chains up to the level of the demand that we are now having.
So burgers and menu prices are one indicator of supply chain issues. Shivens highlighted another price-related indicator, often measured by the millions.
So we're seeing a lack of building supplies. We see that locally with our building projects. Our construction projects have gotten really expensive really fast.
The Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities does a lot of construction.
We are definitely seeing price fluctuations, a lot of prices going up, material shortages in general across the board.
Christopher Goins is a DOT construction engineer who estimates he'll oversee more than $140 million in construction contracts across the region this season. The way competitive bidding on government contracts goes, construction companies doing work now likely locked in what they're being paid months ago or even years ago for multi-season projects before materials prices went wild.
Yeah, so the most part, our contracts in the state of Alaska really don't have what we call escalation clauses. When a dollar amount comes in, it's pretty much a fixed dollar amount for that contract.
Goins says the department has been willing to give contractors extra time, but it's on them to factor risk into their bids. which Goins is seeing for projects in the bidding stage now. When bids come in higher than budgeted, there's only a few options. Ask policymakers for more money, scale projects back to fit the budget, or don't build.
So that's the hard realities of the budgeting process from our end.
Looking forward, Goins has hopes, but no certainty.
I don't think we're through this inflationary blip, if it is a blip, and hopefully the markets, as the country gets back to producing and the world gets back to producing, we hope that some of those higher spikes will begin to fall.
The industry group Associated General Contractors of America has said the materials and supply chain problems may put some firms out of business and add to the industry's high unemployment rates. Southeast Alaska's largest tribal organization will be requiring its employees to be vaccinated against COVID-19. Leadership at the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska met today and decided to require the vaccine. There will be an exemption process, though it hasn't been explicitly laid out. The Executive Council will also require delegates who attend the September Tribal Assembly meeting in person to be vaccinated as well. Juneau City officials reported 15 new cases of COVID-19 today. Six of the new cases are part of an outbreak on the American cruise line ship American Constellation. That cluster is up to about 16 people. 12 of them are isolating on the ship, which is docked in Juneau. There are currently 28 active cases among Juneau residents and non-residents. The city is urging any unvaccinated travelers arriving from Sitka, Anchorage, and the Kenai Peninsula to get tested because of an uptick in cases in those communities. More than 64% of Juneau's total population has been fully vaccinated. 68% have received at least one shot in their vaccine series. Anyone 12 and older can sign up to get vaccinated. And that is it for the KTOO News Update for Friday, July 16th, 2021. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.